Funding for NJ Spotlight News provided by the members of the New Jersey Education Association. Making public schools great for every child. RWJ Barnabas Health. Let's be healthy together. And New Jersey Realtors, the voice of real estate in New Jersey. More information is online at njrealtor.com.
Tonight on NJ Spotlight News, the party's over for the state's party line. A federal appeals court sealing the deal to block the county line ballot system for June's Democratic primary.
It seems like continuing to fight this battle is futile, but maybe people will continue. I don't know.
Also, congestion pricing payback. The MTA now says money will come back to New Jersey to offset the environmental impacts of increased highway traffic.
We don't want the emissions. We don't want the extra cars. The money is secondary.
Plus, desperate for services, a new domestic violence report shines a spotlight on the need for essential services for domestic violence survivors.
Over 90% of homicides in Bergen County are related to domestic violence. I know people are shocked when they hear that.
And more than just lending books, the Montclair Library is now lending help, hiring a social worker to meet the needs of the community.
People are coming in and out all the time, and they're coming here, they're asking for services.
NJ Spotlight News begins right now.
From NJPBS Studios, this is NJ Spotlight News with Brianna Venosi.
Good evening and thanks for joining us this Thursday night. I'm Joanna Gagas. Brianna Venosi is off tonight. While the party line is as good as dead in New Jersey, at least for Democrats, yesterday a federal appeals court upheld a lower court ruling to abolish the line, which gives priority to candidates who have the backing of party leadership in each county. The case was first brought by Congressman Andy Kim, who's running for the U.S. Senate seat currently held by Senator Bob Menendez. The appellate decision is significant because the U.S. Supreme Court is not likely to take up this case, and it'll have an immediate impact on New Jersey voters as they head to the polls for the primaries in early June. Here to explain what it means and who won't be affected by it is senior writer and projects editor Colleen O'Day. Colleen, great to sit down with you. So, okay, we know that the Camden County Democrats challenged the court ruling, right, the federal court ruling to abolish the line. What does that mean for all of the other counties in New Jersey?
You know, I think there are some other counties that would like to have jumped in. Middlesex County, for instance, put in an amicus brief. So in certain counties more than others, Camden County certainly is one. Middlesex is another. I think Hudson is probably another. Bergen County, perhaps. The party bosses, as we call them, the party chairmen, really don't want to give up the kind of power that they've had, which is that, you know, when you make this endorsement and you have this county line, which does seem to have an influence on at least some voters, you know, that is some strength, some power.
But does the appellate court ruling for Camden County now indicate to all the other counties they don't have a shot here?
I think it does, because certainly the judges' decisions, both the U.S. District Court and then the appellate judges, said that there is a high likelihood that Andy Kim and the other plaintiffs will ultimately win the case. So it seems like continuing to fight this battle is futile, but maybe people will continue. I don't know.
So we know that the Democrats are the only ones right now who brought a challenge to the line. So what about Republicans? Are they beholden to these rules? Does the line still hold for them?
So this is really one of the crazy things. And I was just talking with some you know, general folks who say this is not fair. You know, how come one party has one ballot and the other has another ballot? And certainly I think that's a point taken. But in this case, the Republicans were not part of the suit, at least initially. There are some Republican candidates who would really like to get rid of the line as well. That's not going to happen this year. It certainly doesn't look like it anyway, given that in 2 days, the first ballots have to start getting mailed out.
County clerks could decide, though, to do away with the line if they chose to, yes?
Yes, and in fact, the Burlington County clerk did that for the Republicans. She said, why bother having two separate, very different looking ballots for folks? That doesn't seem right. And so she did that. And that, again, was part of this, a state lawsuit actually was brought by Republicans saying, hey, Republican officials, hey, you didn't have the authority to do that. Well, she does, in fact, that was the decision there.
So we've seen some candidates come out in support of doing away with the line, certainly Andy Kim, right, who brought the first challenge against the line. We've seen Steve Phillips say that he'd be in support of no line. Politico this morning reported that, in fact, Congressman Josh Gottheimer worked really hard to keep the line. He says that he would welcome any party county line support. What happens now to the holdouts, those who still really want to get that county line support?
So I think that certainly there is, they can continue to pursue the case. I mean, this is only a preliminary injunction for this year, so this case will continue to move through the courts. You know, a Josh Gottheimer or someone like that could seek to try to intervene. I mean, we did hear that he maybe helped Middlesex County find the lawyer that put in their amicus brief. He could continue with that. And certainly for a Josh Gottheimer, if it's a candidate who was hoping that the county line would help them, they may want to continue to do that because no line could hurt them in the gubernatorial election. Not that he's announced yet, but everyone thinks that he will be jumping into that race. It could help. It could hurt him next year.
Yeah, you teed up my next question. We have a very crowded gubernatorial race already for 2025. Three candidates on the Democratic side, two more coming. Gottheimer could be one of them. Two announced on the Republican side, one more likely coming. Is this anyone's race to win in the few seconds we have left?
At this point, it certainly could be. Steve Sweeney in South Jersey, I think, was counting on the line to cement support throughout South Jersey. That may not happen now next year. Steve Phillips has run as a maverick before. This could help him. Yeah, I mean, you've got Mayor Baraka. It really could be anyone's race.
All right, Colleen O'Day, we got to leave it there. Senior writer, thank you so much.
Thanks, Joanna.
It's not often that an infusion of cash feels like a loss, but in the fight against congestion pricing, well, the Murphy administration may have just been dealt a blow. The MTA has said that money from congestion pricing will be coming to New Jersey to mitigate the environmental impacts of traffic that'll overflow into the state, and that could actually complicate the state's legal challenge against the pricing plan. Senior correspondent Brenda Flanagan has more on this story.
Folks living in areas like Fort Lee, where trucks spew exhaust as they cross the George Washington Bridge, will apparently get some money from the MTA designed to offset increased pollution driven by congestion pricing tolls. At least that's what the agency's CEO, Jana Lieber, acknowledged yesterday.
The way that all of this is determined is allocations by the number of people who are in areas that are impacted by additional truck traffic, and New Jersey will get its share exactly on the arithmetic.
You know, when he talks about arithmetic, I take that with a grain of salt, because their ability to manage money and do math and balance a budget over at the MTA is certainly been challenging.
Bergen County Executive Jim Tedesco joined Governor Murphy's federal lawsuit against the MTA seeking a brand new full environmental impact study that would show how badly trucks seeking to evade those higher tolls will degrade North Jersey air quality. They claim congestion pricing offers millions of dollars for pollution mitigation in areas like the Bronx, but guarantees nothing for Bergen or Hudson counties. But Lieber said the MTA sent updated info to Federal Highway Administration officials.
We've submitted additional materials to them in recent days and weeks, and they're reviewing them. That is part of the process.
This means really nothing to me. And certainly a few pennies on the dollar are not going to change our position. And I'm advocating on behalf of the people of Bergen County and the people of North Jersey and actually even the people of New York. And we're going to continue down the path and continue to fight.
But does the MTA signal that it'll share revenues with Jersey change the legal landscape?
I think that cuts the legs out of New Jersey's strongest claim in the case.
John Reichman filed an amicus brief for environmentalists who support congestion pricing. He says the MTA is following proper steps to obtain final federal approval for its environmental assessment. The plan, green-lighted last summer, includes a list of $45 million in possible pollution mitigation projects like plant roadside vegetation, renovate local parks, and install air filters in schools near highways.
I think the environmental assessment always indicated that there needed to be mitigation in Bergen County. What the environmental assessment didn't say was that what the amount would be and whether it would be commensurate with what the Bronx is receiving. So now, according to the announcement, it will be commensurate.
We don't want the emissions. We don't want the extra cars. The money is secondary. So this is really an issue for folks here in New Jersey.
Environmental justice advocate Melissa Miles says New Yorkers have a right to cleaner air, but New Jersey towns shouldn't have to breathe the displaced pollution. The devil's in the details.
I don't think that it's New York's decision. You know, again, that's where you need to come back to folks who will be impacted and say, okay, what is it that you all need? And it may be financial and it may not be. It may be mitigation of the pollution. It may be both.
She says towns need full environmental data and that New Jersey should abandon car-centric projects like widening the turnpike near the Holland Tunnel. Governor Murphy's office had no comment. The judge is expected to rule on the congestion pricing case in June, the same month the MTA hopes to start collecting tolls. I'm Brenda Flanagan, NJ Spotlight News.
College campuses have become an epicenter for debate and protest over the war in Gaza. Columbia University's president testified before Congress this week over the school's handling of anti-Semitic remarks and protests from both sides that led to the arrest of student protesters today who refused to leave the campus. Those protests echo the demands of Rutgers students asking New Jersey's largest state university to divest from Israeli companies and from its partner, Tel Aviv University. As Ted Goldberg reports, several of those students made their voices heard during a Rutgers Board of Governors meeting today.
BOD, you can hide!
We charge you with genocide!
Rutgers students trekked down to Camden to crash today's Board of Governors meeting.
Board of Governors, you can't hide!
You are funding genocide!
You are funding genocide!
The Board of Governors did not discuss the possibility of divesting from Israel today, but plenty of students did.
Always a Zionist!
Zionists are terrorists!
Zionists are terrorists!
Always a terrorist!
Always a terrorist!
President Jonathan Holloway did respond to the Center for Islamic Life being attacked last week in New Brunswick.
Hate has no place at Rutgers. To that end, we follow up on every bias report or allegation of crime as we receive them. The RUPD is working with local, county, state, and federal law enforcement on investigations. We are grateful to the agencies that are helping us in this work.
Some students blamed Holloway for what happened.
That attack, that hate crime, never would have happened if you hadn't emboldened Zionists by not speaking out against genocide and calling it for what it is.
In normalizing relationships with TAU, you have all created an environment in which the violence against Palestinian and Muslim students abroad has reproduced itself on campus.
TAU is Tel Aviv University. According to the Endowment Justice Collective, Rutgers students overwhelmingly voted to disassociate with Tel Aviv University and divest from companies associating with Israel.
What we see now is students rising up and saying, this is our position as a student body, and our position is to divest from Israeli goods, to divest from Israeli businesses, to break our contract with Tel Aviv University, and to really support the Palestinian people in their struggle for liberation.
We don't need another shiny building. We need investments in our students. We do not need investments in the state of Israel. We need to divest. I'm sure that the divestment vote was discussed in your closed sessions. And we took note that that was not part of the open session agenda.
The closed session meeting lasted for nearly an hour and a half. The open session was frequently interrupted by students who complained that Rutgers was ignoring them in not bringing up the results of the vote.
President Holloway and esteemed board members, you refuse to look at the community members. You refuse to look at the beloved community that has camped outside your door, camped outside this building, that have asked for you to look at them in their eye.
You don't deserve to hold the power that you do because you're abusing it.
Students say they will continue coming to these meetings.
Mothers, fathers, babies, and kids.
And making their presence known to Rutgers administrators. In Camden, I'm Ted Goldberg, NJ Spotlight News.
Domestic violence continues to threaten the health and safety of so many in New Jersey, and the victims are most often women and children. An annual report called Domestic Violence Counts takes a deeper dive into who is most affected, what services they're most in need of, and even worse, what services they can't access in spite of the need. Raven Santana spoke to some of the folks leading the effort to meet the needs of domestic violence survivors.
Over 90% of homicides in Bergen County are related to domestic violence. I know people are shocked when they hear that.
Dr. Julie Miner is the executive director of the Center for Hope and Safety located in Bergen County. The center's mission is to help victims of domestic violence be safe and rebuild their lives.
Each year, we answer hundreds of calls. People calling our hotline, reaching out for help because they are no longer safe in their homes. And at the Safe House in 2023, we provided housing to 296 individuals. The majority of them are women, but also many children. 160 of them are children.
During the survey, 31 out of 39, or 94% of identified domestic violence programs in New Jersey participated. Of the 1,455 victims served in a 24-hour period in September, 937 adult and child victims of domestic violence sought safe shelter. 518 victims received services, including transportation, legal support, and therapy. And domestic violence hotlines received 564 calls, averaging nearly 24 per hour.
The report also found that almost all unmet requests were for emergency shelter, something that Dr. Miner says is critical to survivors.
Housing is incredibly important. Many don't realize that financial abuse is tied in with domestic violence. 99% of the time, the victim will be financially abused. That's a mean for the abuser to help control the victim, keep the victim within the relationship, within the home.
We are working against a housing crisis in New Jersey, which means that even when victims do come in for shelter or transitional housing, oftentimes there's very little for them at the end of that in terms of permanent housing. And so victims often find themselves staying in our services longer, having to go back to the abusive situation, or in some cases even ending up homeless because there are no options available.
Nicole Morella is the co-executive director for the New Jersey Coalition to End Domestic Violence. The state-level nonprofit organization has a membership of 33 domestic violence programs across the state that provide services to victims and their families. Morella says when the pandemic ended, so did funding.
Now we have to thin out and kind of cut back on some of our services. We have to put caps on how long somebody can stay with us or the number of survivors we can serve at one time. So while it may look like the numbers are decreasing, what's actually happening is this is an impact of funding cuts and our programs not being able to reach the same number of victims as we served in 2022 and 2021.
Both Morella and Miner say they're concerned that a decrease in funding allocation for domestic violence could mean a cut in services, counselors, and shelter staff. They now hope the state increases funding, as it could mean the difference between life and death for so many domestic violence victims in the state. For NJ Spotlight News, I'm Raven Santana.
Support for the medical report is provided by Horizon Blue Cross Blue Shield of New Jersey, an independent licensee of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association.
In our Spotlight on Business report tonight, Wall Street's recovering slightly after a four-day losing streak. Here's how the markets closed today. And make sure to tune in to NJ Business Beat with Raven Santana this weekend. She's focused on New Jersey's transportation future. First, looking at how NJ Transit and Rutgers are developing AI technology to keep you safe on the tracks. Then, why New Jerseyans are giving the governor's electric vehicle push mixed reviews. Watch it Saturday morning at 10 on the NJ Spotlight News YouTube channel. Live libraries have always served as safe spaces for people to access information and support, but some libraries are taking that support a step further, offering social workers as part of their staff. As Melissa Rose Cooper reports, the Montclair Public Library is now one of six around the state offering a social worker, and it's having a big impact.
I think libraries are very special places. They don't hold stigma against people. They're a place that's when it's cold, they're warm, when it's hot.
Just some of the qualities Mia Boxer says made her want to become a social worker here at the Montclair Public Library. For the past month, Boxer has been meeting with patrons, helping them connect to various resources, from financial assistance to clothing, all while providing a safe space for them to talk.
I think a lot of times people need help with stuff and librarians are too busy. They have their other roles, so a social worker can help fill the position of actually helping them with more in-depth time when a librarian has to help manage the floor.
The Montclair Public Library is one of the latest in New Jersey staffed with an on-site licensed social worker. It's an initiative Assistant Director Selwa Shami says had been in the works for a few years.
We actually had two social work interns from Montclair State University. The first one was with us in the middle of the pandemic, so we were only partially open and we didn't really get a whole lot of traffic. But then we had the second year we had another intern, and that's when things were really opening up. And what we noticed is we were getting a lot more people coming in with what appeared to be mental health challenges, and it was really alarming, actually.
But when the interns left, Shami says it created a big void. That's why she's happy the library was finally able to bring on a part-time social worker, thanks to a grant from the Partners for Health Foundation.
People are coming in and out all the time, and they're coming here, they're asking for services, so that we also, you know, put together a binder of services. But sometimes people just needed, you know, they really need that professional help.
I think a variety of different factors highlighted those needs. One of them was, you know, the COVID crisis that really showed, you know, a real difference between people who had easier access to resources and people who had much more challenging access to government resources and other kinds of resources. And so I think social workers have been able to demonstrate the need for having a central place in a community that feels accessible to everyone, that everyone can trust.
I will tell you that library social work is not effective without the library itself.
David Perez knows firsthand the significance of having on-site social services available at the library as the state's first full-time library social worker. He says it has always been a place to seek help, and now more people are recognizing a library can offer more than just books.
Libraries are all about meeting the information needs of people, of patrons. So, you know, with libraries comes a natural space, you know, for to engage with community, right? And then when you add a social worker into that, you know, a person who has a professional person with a social work lens is able to thrive in this community-centered space. Public space.
There are six libraries staffed with licensed social workers across the state. Patrons at the Montclair Public Library can set up a one-on-one visit in advance or meet with a social worker on a first-come, first-served basis. For NJ Spotlight News, I'm Melissa Rose Cooper.
Some sad news. 10th Congressional District Representative Donald Payne Jr. suffered a heart attack on April 6th, and despite his press office sending out repeated statements that the congressman is in stable condition and recovering in the hospital, New Jersey Globe has confirmed today that the sixth-term congressman has not regained consciousness since the cardiac event and that he's been on a ventilator at Newark Beth Israel Medical Center for these last 11 days. In a statement to NJ Spotlight News, Payne's team said the cardiac episode was related to complications from his diabetes. They added that they hope for a full recovery for the congressman. We also send our wishes to Congressman Payne that he recovers quickly and fully. In the meantime, many questions remain about his return to the House and the delicate balance of power that remains in the narrowly divided lower chamber. And that's going to do it for us tonight. But don't miss Reporters Roundtable tomorrow. David Cruz talks with Senate Republican leader Anthony Bucco about the GOP's take on school funding, the state budget, Oprah, and the court rulings on the party line. You can catch Reporters Roundtable tomorrow at noon on the NJ Spotlight News YouTube channel. I'm Joanna Gagas for the entire NJ Spotlight News team. Thanks for being with us. Have a great evening, and we'll see you tomorrow.
NJM Insurance Group. Serving the insurance needs of residents and businesses for more than 100 years. Horizon Blue Cross Blue Shield of New Jersey, an independent licensee of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Association. New Jersey Realtors, the voice of real estate in New Jersey. More information is online at njrealtor.com. And by the PSCG Foundation.
Life is unpredictable. Health insurance shouldn't be. For over 90 years, Horizon Blue Cross Blue Shield of New Jersey has provided quality, affordable health plans to New Jersey residents. We have served generations of New Jersey families and businesses and are committed to driving innovations that put you at the heart of everything we do. Our members are our neighbors, our friends, and our families. We're here when you need us most. Horizon, proud to be New Jersey.
NJM Insurance Group has been serving New Jersey businesses for over a century. As part of the Garden State, we help companies keep their vehicles on the road, employees on the job, and projects on track. Working to protect employees from illness and injury, to keep goods and services moving across the state. We're proud to be part of New Jersey. NJM, we've got New Jersey covered.